Hello everyone, and welcome to the most promoted game dev podcast in the world, House of Games. Today I'm joined by my host Otto and a very special guest, me. Just kidding, I'm not special, I'm awesome. Just kidding, we don't have a guest today. So let's bash that door down and let us enter this week's episode of House of Games. Welcome everyone to the newest episode of House of Games. As you heard in the intro, we're doing a non-guest episode again today. A natural episode, if you will.
Very natural. I have no idea what we're going to talk about even.
So I was thinking that, for example, we could start talking a little bit about your game, Sunset Moon, and give us an update about what the current progress is and what you're working on.
Yes, sure. Well, first off, I think by the time this episode airs, I have just done or about to do my like a live presentation at this sort of game dev meetup thing here in Tokyo. So quite excited about that. I signed up and I'm on the list. I haven't even prepared the speech though. So I'm going to Gunma next week to my wife's family. There's some sort of holiday. So my plan is to sort of outline what I'm going to talk about at the event. And I think I'm going to sort of lean into this whole Animal Crossing feat Black Mirror, which I sort of feel like that's what the game is leaning towards. But anyway, what I've been working on since last time, I can't even remember what I talked about last time, probably the dialogue system and stuff like that. Now I am working on this plow system when you, like, basically the whole farming system. So you can plow the earth and set seeds, water the seeds, and they will grow based on that.
So I've played Stardew Valley at least. So in Stardew Valley you have tiles and you dig like in a specific tile. But plow, do you just go through like a couple of like tiles, or is it like a separate ones?
It's just like Stardew Valley, I suppose.
Right, like you have one tile that you dig.
Yeah.
And then you dig the next one and so on.
Yes, but because I want this game to be a mini open world as well, and you should always have something to look forward to when you play the game, I came up with a brilliant idea. Because it's not like Harvest Moon and Stardew Valley is sort of focusing a lot on the farming aspects. I think this game is, I'm trying to sort of divide it. It's the 33% story, 33% farm, 33% exploring and do puzzles and stuff like that. So
cool.
So I'm trying to make, well, that would be very difficult to balance this. So for example, you shouldn't be able to do all the puzzles the first week of the game, and then there's no more puzzles to do. And one thing I thought was really cool, which I came up with just the other day, which forced me to redo the plow system, was that when you plow, so the lore of the game is that this used to be an old fortress from the olden days. And now it's like, over time, people come there and rebuild it, like it does in the real world. So now when you plow your farm, you will have like, the layer underneath the plow tiles, I make them vector graphic. So then I can have like my own sort of graphics, if that makes sense, underneath those plows. So for example, if you on your farm in this game and you just like plow all the tiles, there will be something underneath there, some old like symbols and stuff like that from the olden days when people lived here. I'm sort of inspired by those in Peru. They have these lines drawn in the sand and stuff like that. You can only see them from the sky. Yeah, so sort of like that. So if you plow the whole field, you will see like a bigger picture of something that is underneath it. And there might be, in one of my vlogs, I showcased this, I have this made-up alphabet in the game. So there might be some text there too. So then you would have to translate that text by yourself. You obviously have to figure out what everything means. And then that could be a hint to like how to open this door, which you found earlier on. So that I thought was a pretty cool way of turning the whole farming plow system into a puzzle of its own. And I'm also thinking, which I'm working on right now, is that imagine you have like this Maya sort of figure, like from the olden days in the real world. So imagine like a, how should I explain, like a stones, so some drawing under the mud, right? And this drawing is, let's say it's like a person holding something in her hand. And that thing she's holding in the hand, you don't know, it's nothing there, right? It's just like an empty tile. But you can read and learn about this world. And let's say this figure has a red dress or something. And then it says something in a book somewhere in this world, like, the red-dressed lady loves her tomatoes. And then if you plant a seed, a tomato seed, right where her hand is, it will, when that seed grows up, it will unlock like this, like a statue will sort of pop up from the ground. Imagine like Zelda stuff. And then you can get some items there.
Next level, man.
Yeah, so I mean, that's what I love making in Red Colony, that all these puzzles. So some of those puzzles are in this game too, where you get the hints from the environment. But now I'm taking it one step further. And then you can also imagine that, for example, there is a, let's say you need to set certain seeds, but you don't have the seed yet, so you have to wait for the right season to buy the seed. Or maybe you can only buy that seed when it's like a spring market, and then there's this guy who comes to town and sells rare things. So you can buy the seeds from him then. So yeah, like I said, you shouldn't be able to just do all the puzzles at once. So, but you should understand that, well, I don't have what I need to do this puzzle now, but later on in the game, I will have whatever it is I need, and so on. So the plow system turned into a very complex and fun, I think, way of doing it. And this is obviously only for people who pay attention to, who might notice that, hold on, when I plow things, there seems to be something underneath here. And then they unplow fields, and then there are these old drawings in the ground, and then, yeah, and so on.
Cool. It kind of reminds me of the movie 23, if you've seen that. It's basically Jim Carrey's doing a horror movie, or a thriller, I think. And I think it's based on a real syndrome where people are like obsessed with the number 23, I think it is.
Is it 33?
Yeah, maybe 33, I don't know. Some, like, because, you know, you can like cleverly like divide a bunch of important numbers by that or something, and like a bunch of important dates happened on the, you know, 33rd day of whatever. And so on. And yeah. Interesting, very interesting. As I said, next level, it feels like not just that puzzle where you have, like, for example, the worst kind of puzzle is like the Skyrim puzzle, where you have like, basically you have like, every dungeon has the same puzzle, which is you see three symbols like above the door, and then you have like three spinny things, and you just spin in the right way. So it's hardly even figuring out, it's just like turning a lever three times. Basically.
Yes. Yeah. No, I really... But the scary thing of making these sort of deeper puzzles is that it might turn people off. But like I said, I really hope I can sort of balance this 33% puzzle, 33% story, 33% farming, or I don't know, 20% puzzle, something like that. So people shouldn't get too hung up on them if they can't figure them out. Or at least I hope they can understand that they will get this later. Because the whole game takes place on this one place, so... And I feel like that's the case with all these Stardew Valley, Harvest Moon, Animal Crossing. I haven't played much of Animal Crossing, but you can sort of see when you can go somewhere and you can't. Another great indicator of that, or how I can sort of prepare the player in a sense, is that there's a big rock, for example, blocking a passage. And then when you hit it with your hammer, it will say your hammer is too weak. So you obviously know then that you have to upgrade your hammer. Same thing you have in Stardew Valley and Harvest Moon and so on. So those hints should be enough for the player to understand that, okay, I can't do this puzzle now because something is missing, or I don't have an item, and so on. But over time, you will get more and more clues. But you will have to write down the alphabet yourself so far. It would be cool, though, to have like a, because there's a library on the island of Sunset Moon. So imagine there's this nerd who helps you translate it. So let's say you could go to him and say, this symbol is an A, this one is a B. So you could, for example, figure that out. If you see four symbols in the world, let's say in front of, I have a great example is a bus stop. And it says stop. It's written in my made up language. So you could figure out it says bus stop. So then you would know what the STOP is. And then you go to the library and say, this is a T, this is a O, this is a P. And then when you read books and so on, it would fetch that information and translate those things to what you think they are. But of course, if you have translated it wrong, it will fetch the wrong numbers.
Yeah, cool. That would be really, really amazing. Like you could just fill in like the cipher, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, but that sounds very complicated. So I don't know if I can pull that off, but that would be down the line. Like for now, it's designed so you had to write it down yourself on your with pen and paper. But who knows, maybe down the line I can figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't sound that complicated that you would have like just a spot on like this symbol is placed here and there and there, and then you have those places like grouped together something, and then when you like says that this symbol I think is A, and then it just all of those places it just puts those things in.
The only what I think is complicated, and I don't even know if this works yet, because I have this dialogue system. So it's a couple of things. First of all, if I want longer texts, I suppose I would make my own font. I tried it before but failed. But there are softwares out there where I make my own fonts. So that would be step number one, is to make my own font so I can actually type it on my own computer. And then number two...
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, but number two would be that Unity needs to be able to read that homemade font. And then that, so it can be displayed in the game. And then number three would be that dialogue system has to somehow connect with the system you and I just made up that swaps them out and stuff like that somehow. So yeah, I can't figure out in my head just now, but of course it's possible. It should be.
Yes, absolutely. Sounds very interesting.
So that's the update on Sunset Moon, at least. How about Odo's game development?
Oh, well, it's, status quo, I guess. But at least I would say that I'm really catching up to editing this podcast, actually. So I've been doing a lot of editing in triple speed. And I didn't realize that listening to the podcast as you're editing it was the, big bottleneck to how long it takes. So now I usually do editing in the morning, so from 5 to 8 or something. And those 3 hours usually got me maybe 5 or 10 minutes worth of edited content.
Oh my god, yeah.
But now I can easily do half an episode in that same time instead.
Oh, wow.
So now I have, 4 separate days. If I, keep the schedule as I should, I have 4 separate days of producing the podcast. So the first day is, just... I have to do, the really rough stuff. Like, just making sure that no words are, said simultaneously as another, because the editing software doesn't like that to produce subtitles and stuff. And then just remove all, if there's a lot of noise and stuff, remove that and stuff. So do that, and that takes 2 or 3 hours at tops, but I think I can do it maybe in 1 hour or 2 hours, usually. And then, day 2 and 3 is editing either half of the episode, which is just removing all the ums and all the those kind of things, and removing things that just are, if you go out in a tangent and it's not relevant to the episode or anything, I remove that as well. Just the rough stuff. And then day 4, I listen to the episode in normal speed, and then do the more intricate, if I cut out an but it's too close to another word, for example, then I just have to keep that because that sounds better than having the word cut off in the middle, for example. Do those sort of small things and change a lot of stuff. And then when I get to the end of it, I export it to a WAV file, and then I listen to it back again after it is exported, because sometimes the software can input echoes and stuff into the output file. It's kind of rare, but I like to make sure at least that it's... So I'm just listening to it in the background without paying attention to it. while I'm doing that, I'm just fixing all of the other stuff. For example, the description. So I usually try to get all of the games and stuff we've talked about into the description. So if people hear about the game and they're curious to try it out, you can find it in the description. And I'm also thinking, in our 52nd episode, we've talked a little bit about it, our like 1 year anniversary, that we should, for example, switch to video. So that would be a really cool thing. But I'm also thinking for the 52nd episode that, since I've written down all the games that we talked about in the episode, I could do some statistics, like what percentage are we, like, of all the games, what are the percentages? Like, we're talking about, like, I don't know, Dark Souls 12% of the episodes, or, you know, whatever it might be.
Ah, cool.
So that would be really cool to know, or how many of the episodes do we talk about this or that, or, you know, just sort of a fun little thing that should be quite quickly to compile.
Yeah, cool. He's such a number nerd. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We complete each other, maybe, oh. I guess.
But I wonder, just out of curiosity, now that we record this episode, for example, how damaged are you from all this editing? Like, do you feel like you cannot make your own ums anymore? Or do you feel like you do less of them? Or do you think about it?
Yeah, I would absolutely say that I'm trying to say less ums in, like, all the time nowadays, because in the beginning especially it was so much editing and I tried to remove all of them, and I just realized if I just try to be like be less trashy when I talk and just skip all the stuff I shouldn't say, then I don't have to edit that. So I really have tried to, I don't know if that's audible or not for the listeners, but I've really tried to skip all the parts that you don't want to say. For example, so what I realized is that in normal conversation, it sounds a lot better actually with the, all of the ums and stuff, because you want to convey that you're thinking and that you're like, you're not finished with what you're about to say. But in recorded audio, it sounds like you don't know what you're talking about, something like that. But I've tried to think about it and just not say it, and then just try to be quiet when I don't know what to say, instead of saying an because, you know, eventually maybe I won't say them at all. Who knows? So, absolutely. And it's also that I unconsciously, when someone mentions something on this podcast or they say something, I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to end this probably this way, or oh, I'll probably will need to find a link for that or something. It's, yeah, so it's, you do get you. And also I would say that in the beginning I was like most people, I would say that I was really annoyed with hearing my own voice because I thought, well, I don't sound like that. But now I would absolutely say, or after maybe 10 episodes, I feel like I'm so used to hearing my own voice that I really, really don't think about it at all. And it's not that I've realized, like, no, I don't sound like that, it's okay. I've realized that, yeah, I do sound like that.
Oh my god.
Like, what I'm hearing in the audio. And that's what I accepted, sort of. So I'm starting to, like, listening to myself when I'm talking, not on the podcast, and I'm realizing, yeah, it does sound like the audio stuff, like the recorded stuff, which is kind of weird, but yeah, so that's some takeaways from the podcast.
Yeah, I had a couple of weeks where I found a sort of perfect pocket to listen to our own episodes, and I thought it was awful to hear myself. But I do agree, even after like 3 episodes, it felt better. But now I sort of fell off that routine I had. So I think I'm going to try to get into it again. Now that I have my new gym, there is like, I know when I can sort of listen to this podcast. Because I guess there's something, it's, if you do podcast or whatever, it's a good thing maybe to get used to your own voice, or...
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think also for, you know, I'm a fan of, in game development, I'm a fan of having voice acting, for example, even if it's bad, rather than no And if you, as a game developer like me, I would think it's gonna be fun to do my own voice acting in my own game. And I think part of that is being comfortable with the way you sound. And I think, for me at least, so if I count up the number of times that I listen to myself every week, so for every episode, it's like the first time I listen to bits and pieces when I do the rough editing, then for 2 days I'm listening to myself for the whole episode, like, but in 3x speed, and then I listen to myself in normal speed once before exporting, and then I listen to myself once after exporting. So, and then I listen to myself as well when making the trailer, for example. So I'm listening to myself so much that you don't have the energy to care anymore. So I think at that point, maybe you can just record stuff and it sounds like any other person.
True.
Maybe.
Speaking of voice acting in your game, like, I was also thinking about, I mean, of course I want voice actors in my game, but you, like, when I ask you the question, do you feel like you got damaged from doing all this editing and then eventually you're sort of censoring yourself / editing yourself while you're speaking to avoid extra work? It reminds me of Red Colony 3, when I think I mentioned it before, but when I wrote that story, I assume that we're gonna voice act it, that the publisher's gonna pay for it and all that, but the sales for Red Colony 2 wasn't as good as Red Colony 1, even though it's a better game. But anyway, so we couldn't afford the voice actors, and also we got a really good deal when they voice acted Red Colony 2. But as I was writing Red Colony 3, I cut out so much stuff, and like, for some people, that's great, obviously, because maybe they just want to play for the gameplay, which I assume no one does, based on the game. I cut out so much stuff because I kept thinking, if I have a voice actor, I have to have less than this in terms of words in the game, otherwise it's going to cost too much. And there was even, like, one of the original storylines was that Mina, the main character, who is a droid and want to turn to a human, that she finds a human child on Titan where it takes place, and that she start to mother this child, like, care for the child. And then I was just thinking, well, then we need a baby's voice actor too, like, ooh, that's gonna be hard, that's gonna be expensive, so I cut that out. And I'm so bummed now, yeah, after the fact, that I thought like that. I shouldn't do that. And that totally, this is when, like, corporate bullshittery infiltrate your artistic visions. Because that's such a perfect example of when I didn't follow my heart, I didn't do what I wanted to do. Instead, I just thought about the money, how much it's going to cost, all the sort of corporate shit. And the end result is, in my opinion, a worse product. And because we didn't get voice actors anyway, it's like, what a missed opportunity to have that whole thing when she find this baby and look after the baby while you play the game. I thought that would be an amazing and cool twist to the story.
But then again, I think maybe that would be, if you hire voice actors anyhow, then I guess you can't just come with your own, like, laptop mic and try to do one voice, because that's gonna sound inconsistent, I guess. But yeah, I absolutely get what you mean.
But with Sunset Moon, because I remember when we talked, because I told my publisher this too, like, I feel somewhat limited with the story stuff here. And then one of the options we had was, well, what if we only pay for the story-driven stuff? And I believe Final Fantasy 16 that just came out have something like that. Not all of the dialogues in the games are voice acted, and I've heard some people think it's really weird. But I remember other games in the past I played is also like that, especially role-playing games, JRPGs or whatever, role-playing games, that they don't voice act all of them. But with Red Colony, that would not be an option, because it's such a tight and short story. I mean, the game is, what, 2-3 hours, and it's just all in there. So that would be weird to do that. But that was by the time we talked about this, it was too late anyway to go back and change anything, or me adding that baby stuff into the game. But with Sunset Moon, I have kept this in mind, though, that maybe if I would have to pay for this myself, I could maybe afford the main story stuff. I'm even thinking, like, so we talked to a couple of episodes ago someone who was about to make a Kickstarter, and I was thinking, man, if this game could get enough traction by the time it's time for the voice acting stuff, it would be a neat thing to just try to raise, I don't know how much it would cost, $4,000 or $5,000 maybe, to voice act more of the game. So my own capital plus a little bit from a Kickstarter.
But then I think it's a good thing that we're doing podcasting, because then we are sort of learning about voice acting and how to improve like voice quality and stuff. So potentially, if there's, you know, some not that important NPC that could have a voice and you can do it cheaply, you could do it with Mike, and we now do have some knowledge and skills on how to improve voice quality. So perhaps, you know.
Yeah. I definitely think, like, even if I were to make a Kickstarter or voice act it and pay for it, I would definitely do some of the voices myself to save money. But it is that OCD part of my brain that don't want to have, like, my fucking microphone quality versus the professionals. So if I could sort of rent myself into that company and do some of the lines, that would be perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think at least... So there's a couple of options on that, actually. So first of all, I would say that trying it out is kind of cheap, at least, to see what does it sound like when you put your own voice in there. But also, there is usually in big cities, and knowing that Tokyo is like the biggest one, there probably is one there too, but at least here in Stockholm, there is a lot of rooms where you can rent like a professional studio room or like a podcast room for that kind of thing, and you can rent it by hour or by day or something like that. And sometimes if you know people, you can just borrow, for example.
That's actually a great idea, because I happen to be a talent here in Japan, and I signed up with a talent studio.
Yeah, exactly.
I could probably get, like, and they do even have voice actors, which is, yeah, that could be an option.
Yeah. So, because you don't need, you know, if it's your lines and you know what you need to say and you can just get through them in a couple of hours, then I don't think that it's going to be that big of a expense to rent a studio or borrow some equipment or whatever it might be, just to get that through.
Yeah, but there is so much text in this game. It's unbelievable. I think it's like... all Red Colony games combined times 10 or something. It's shitloads. But, you know, and the best part about it is that most of it you won't even notice. Most of it you won't even see. Like, the dialogue system, it works in that way where if you don't talk to this NPC in the autumn, in the beginning of the autumn, it's not going to branch off to a certain conversation. And this is like, I fucking love developers who do these things that you can miss. And I want to be one of those developers who put so much love and care into a product, and then you miss, I don't know, 60% of it, but you still have a good experience. So, but the main story, that would only require like maybe 10 characters from the game. I think it's going to be around 40 NPCs in the game. But let's say if I were to voice act all of them, what I imagine is that I could probably get a good deal with my talent agency here in Tokyo. Because when you pay talents, let's say I get paid 100,000 yen, that means that the agency gets also 100,000 yen. So the client has to pay 200,000 yen for this whole thing. So I can imagine that my agency can give me a good deal on that. And then just so all the money goes to the talents. And then, like you said, rent one of those rooms.
Do you plan to voice the female characters as well?
Of course. I don't know which one I would do.
Look forward to playing this game.
Yeah, but yeah, it's. But one of the things the cool thing with this, which just I thought about this when you talked about renting, doing it myself. One of the things I wanted in Knife Boy was that people talked different languages. So when you talked to an NPC, he would, but it was not voice acted. It would just show the Spanish text. So if you didn't understand Spanish, you wouldn't understand what he said. That's it. To create this sort of this true multicultural world, or You know, well, we both like to travel and are somewhat multicultural in many ways. But that's one of the things I fucking love about traveling, when you're trying to communicate with someone and you don't speak the same language and it's just like gestures and all this stuff. I think that's a beautiful thing. I know that gamers probably hate it when you don't understand everything and so on. But at least with Red Colony, Sunset Moon, a cool thing would be, because the talent agency here in Tokyo, it's only international people from all over the world, so that would be really cool to have all these accents, which I think would make so perfect sense in this Sunset Moon world, that you live on this small island and they're all people are from the mainland. The mainland is never really explained, but it makes sort of perfect sense that someone has a Russian accent or someone has some sort of Chinese accent, so can't pronounce certain letters and so on, words. So I think that would make it very beautiful, and for me at least, that would be such a neat thing. But if you're not into traveling and all that stuff, culture and shit, then maybe it will just be annoying when people don't have the same accent or whatever. One thing I remember being young, playing Metal Gear Solid 3, and this is when my English really sucked back then, but even back then I understood that there was one certain conversation where the scientist in the game, I forget his name, but he tells Snake, "Your Russian is excellent," but you know, they're both speaking English. And even when I was that young, I thought, well, that's kind of fucking weird. They should just speak Russian. Like, why are we pretending that he speaks Russian even though he's speaking English?
Exactly, yeah, that bugs me all the time. Like in movies, for example, you have like, say, two Russian characters or two Spanish characters or whatever, non-English speaking characters, and then in a scene they're alone, nobody else there, and they choose not to speak like their native language, but they speak English instead, which is just so fucking lazy that, you know, they, yeah, it's sort of a... It takes you out of the immersion that you're following these characters, and instead it's just, well, it's a movie, so you need to understand.
But I think, like, even when some movies, when they do actually bother to learn the language, I saw something not too long ago, but I can't remember what it was. But I'm thinking, to go back to Metal Gear Solid 3, even if David Hayter, the voice actor for Snake, however you pronounce his name, even if he tried to just speak Russian in those conversations when he's talking to this Russian scientist in the game, that would be so much more immersive and cooler. Even if he has a poor Russian pronunciation and accent, even that is cooler. And imagine if you're Russian playing the game, that would feel even more awesome. And then you can totally tell that, man, his accent is shit, but it's still like good enough in the context, and that the scientist in the game sort of praise him for his Russian. So, yeah, that would be cool. But
speaking of languages and games, and also speaking of Final Fantasy that you mentioned a couple of minutes ago. So I have, and also it sort of ties into AI a little bit, our favorite subject on this podcast, I think. But I recently have found a really, really good method of learning Japanese. So I'm studying Japanese, and I have a good method to get me to the next level, so to speak.
Oh, okay. So what is that?
So a while back, a friend of mine, he recommended me to play the Final Fantasy games, because I've never played them. And I thought that, all right, maybe I'll give it a try. And I think he recommended 7 or something like that. But I think I'm sort of a completionist person, so I really want to do it like done all of them or nothing, I guess. So I played the first and the second one on my Android, since they ported it to Android. And then it just went well, and it sort of became nothing, and I didn't continue playing them. But now I thought about starting to play it again, but I thought, why don't I play it in Japanese so I could learn from that process? And then, you know, if I play through all of them until, like, what is it, 16 or something that's come out now in Japanese, I will have learned like a shitload. And by that time, maybe I will be able to understand like everything in the games, which is then I would be on a, like a really high level. So that's what I've done. Like this week, I've been playing Final Fantasy 3 on my cell phone, like so much.
Yeah, I'm curious though. Like when I played Ni No Kuni for the first time on the PlayStation 3, that's just when I arrived in Japan. I went to a language school and I just did not enjoy learning at all. And then I realized that when I was a kid, I played all these RPG games in English, obviously, but I didn't understand any of it either. I mean, the only way for me to get through like Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9 in particular, it was like by looking at, they would highlight certain words that had some meaning. So go northwest, and then it would, northwest would be written in red. And then I could check in a lexicon. What is it called? Is it called lexicon? Well, translation book, whatever. I think I used the word lexicon before, it felt right, but someone, there was a native English speaker who didn't know.
I think that is like it has the same meaning, but maybe it's not as much used as dictionary in English, I guess. Yeah.
Ah, dictionary. There we go. Yeah. So I would check what northwest meant, and then I could figure out where to go. And then I started playing Ni No Kuni the same way. Like, I thought, well, I hate going to school. I hate learning. But if I play a game, it could be much more fun. But what I'm curious about, because you don't understand kanji, do you? Or do you already know kanji? Or do you? Is it written in furugana?
Yeah, here is where the AI comes into the story. So, and by the way, I would say I also had the same thought for playing Final Fantasy III in Japanese. That, like, the way I learned English was pretty much to games and movies and stuff. And, for example, RuneScape, I played that a ton. And when I started it, and when I, like, until adulthood, maybe. Maybe still now I'm playing it a little bit. But then I just looked up all of the words that I didn't know, and eventually you just got through so much of it that you, I guess you learned a lot from it. But anyhow, so yes, that is usually an issue, that with games, that there's a lot of kanji and stuff that you don't know, so like it's all or nothing. Either you can read it or you're just gonna get stuck. So I thought that, well, maybe I could just look up every sentence, I guess. It's gonna be hard at first, but then eventually I will have, you know, some phrases will repeat themselves, and then I will have looked them up so frequently, then I will just learn that, okay, that character means this, and it's pronounced this way. But then I thought, because I've been using ChatGPT quite a lot for all kinds of stuff, so I thought, why don't I check if ChatGPT can just translate it for me? So that's what I do now. So my process is basically this. So I do translate basically almost every like dialogue box, which is like really fitting, because you can just stop, it stops after every dialogue, so I can just, you know, process it before I continue to the next one. So I just screenshot that.
Oh, that's what I was gonna ask. How do you get that thing into ChatGPT?
Yeah, so I screenshot that, and then in my photo app, you can press a button to copy the text that's in the image. So I copy the text from the image, and then paste it into ChatGPT, and then ask it to explain like the grammar and the meaning and like nuance and stuff. And it's like having a private tutor. So it just goes through word by word. This is what it means. This is the furugana, like how it's pronounced. And this is the grammar, and this is why he says this. And for example, a lot of like old men, old characters in Final Fantasy use the pronoun washi instead of watashi. And it explains like, oh, this washi, this is used by primarily like old men, man characters. So, and that's the sort of stuff that you wouldn't be able to look up, perhaps. And it says like, oh, this is like a dialectal term, and this is like a very casual way of saying it, and so on. It's like so amazing to do it. Like, for example, and then when you look stuff up, you really get used to reading, like, say the word madoshi, for example, which is magician. It has like really, really complicated kanji, but they use that word like all the time. Like, you have a job type, which is like one type or another of magician, and you use like this or that type of magic, which uses Maho, which is almost the same characters, and so on. And like those complicated characters and stuff. So now I know exactly how they're pronounced, I know what it means and stuff, because I just looked them up so frequently. So now at the beginning I really had to look up exactly everything, but now, having played it for, I think my save file says something like 10 hours. So now I go through, it's quite frequent that I go through like maybe 3 dialogue boxes and I understand everything and don't have to look it up.
What?
I mean, as a prerequisite, I think I have learned, you know, basic Japanese. I can do like casual conversations and stuff, and I do understand like basic grammar and stuff. If you know that, you can read basic sentences and you understand like basic conjugation stuff. So that I already knew. But there's a lot of like vocabulary and some conjugations that I didn't know that well. But going in with that, I think that was like a good jumping off point. So now I'm really learning, and there's a lot of stuff that you can learn from playing games. For example, there's a lot of like passive form that you don't see anywhere else that is more common in this game that I've really gotten the hang of that. And there's, you know, a lot of good stuff from playing it. So I absolutely recommend it to anyone who wants to learn Japanese. But first you sort of gotta get the base level.
I'm curious though how you, I mean, you do this on the phone. How do you find time for it? And also, do you have to get out of the game and then do the translation and then tap back inside the game? And how long does that take to load to get back in?
So basically, I have, so I think it's 4 apps open when I play the game. So I first play the game, I encounter some dialogue, and I would say that it's kind of a relief that with Final Fantasy, you know, in the beginning, there's a lot of dialogue and a lot of exposition and a lot of talking to people, because I want to talk to like every NPC so I can, you know, learn everything. But then eventually you get to a point where, well, you just need to grind to get to this level before you can continue. And then there's basically no dialogue. You know, there's maybe a monster name that you look up or something, but that's about it. Sorry, what was the question again? Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, how do you find time, and also how do you get back in and out from the app?
Yeah. So you do, like every app, you can just click a button to see your recently opened app. So basically you encounter a dialogue box and then I just screenshot that. Then I go switch app to my gallery app, which, or the photo app, and then just copy the text. Then switch to ChatGPT and then I just paste it in. And the good thing with ChatGPT is that when you have given it initial instructions, so like the first time I opened that chat with ChatGPT, I said explain this with the furigana and the pronunciation and meaning and everything, and then after that I just have to paste in the Japanese and it understand that I want the same thing over and over and over again. So you can just paste in a single word or a whole meaning or whatever it might be. It's just copying, pasting, and then I get that. And then I have a 4th tab, which is jisho.org, which is a dictionary. Because ChatGPT usually gives me, like, sometimes it clumps words together. Like, these words together means despite blah blah blah. But I want, like, the individual particles to understand those. So then I usually paste or copy-paste some words into the dictionary to see them individually and see them, like, in bigger size and see how they're written and some of that stuff. And then after I've sort of... Because it also reads out the English translation of it, which helps a lot. So then I just read through all the words, make sure I sort of get how they're pronounced and I get the meaning, and then I switch back to the photo app usually so I can sit like not having like accidentally clicking to the next dialogue box, but then I can sit there and then I read the sentence again, and then I usually sort of understand it now that I've seen all the words. Then I go back to the game and then proceed and then redo it if I found some more dialogue. So that's usually, and I've made a point to it. I've heard, because I looked at YouTube, some recommendations for doing exactly this. But at that time, because those videos were a couple of months old, so they none were using ChatGPT, but I'm sure they're doing that now. But they said, like, make a point of not, like, entering this into an Anki deck or anything like that, because it's just going to be so much work. Just understand what, like, the dialogue is, and then just move on and then go to the next one. Because if you read something that's important, then it's going to come up again and again and again, and because of that you will learn it. But if it's something that's, you know, they talk a lot about, like, prophecy and, you know, this complicated stuff, and if that only comes up once, well, you don't have to remember it because it only comes up once, so you won't even need it, which is a really good methodology, I think. So, yeah, so that's how I learned Japanese with Final Fantasy. It's really amazing. So I'm on game number 3 now, first one I play in Japanese, so I plan to get through all of them, hopefully.
Wow. I'm curious, like, Final Fantasy 11 and 14 are online, though, so I guess you don't want...
Yeah, we'll see what I do about that. Maybe I take those last or something.
I was just watching gameplay from Final Fantasy 13, which is not really one of the most popular ones, even though I like it, and Final Fantasy 8 too, which is also one that I like that is not very popular. But I was, now that you talk, like, I'm thinking about, because I downloaded the Ni No Kuni for my Steam Deck, and I start playing it until I got stuck or if I'm underleveled. And I'm just thinking now that, fuck, like, I should do what you're doing. Because I can at least read Japanese, and in, not kanji though, very few kanjis, but in Ni No Kuni they do that because more like, you know.
I've heard that recommended also for learning Japanese.
Yeah, because they do what they do in children's books here. So you have like a kanji, and above it, there's a hiragana. So you will just read the hiragana parts, and then the idea is that you just have a quick look at the kanji, and then eventually that's just gonna, you know, you will just remember it. So when I started playing Ni No Kuni this time around, I didn't play it in Japanese. Because I thought, I don't think I'm going to bother learning Japanese. And I also sort of thought, like, I'm going to push this until my son comes home with homework. And that would be a great opportunity for me to actually learn Japanese. But since I lived in Sweden last year and worked in a proper place with workmates and all that stuff, I am longing for joining a company again, like working with other people. I am so sick and bored of sitting in this fucking wardrobe every day and work on my own shit. Like, I, of course, when I finish up Sunset Moon, but I really think this will be my last game, and then I'm gonna try to get a job somewhere. But here in Japan, like, I should speak Japanese. Like, the jobs I applied for so far, I haven't met that particular requirements, but yeah.
But let me offer you a middle way, maybe, to continue your artist dreams.
Yes.
So, have you heard of co-working locations?
Yes.
So, I'm planning on maybe, like, signing up for a membership like that, because I'm also sort of in the same situation. The office of my employer is in Umeå, and I'm in Stockholm, and, you know, I'm sitting at, you know, going to work is just going to the kitchen table, basically, from the bed, and then just, you know, and after work, well, you can just go from the kitchen table to the kitchen, start making dinner. So having somewhere to go would be amazing. And then you also have a lot of other people who are in the same situation who also would just want somewhere to go. And you can socialize and sort of have that office stuff. So I don't know if there's a lot of those places in Japan as well, or what the situation is.
In Tokyo, there's a lot of them. My publisher, they were a part of one of those. So they had their own office, but they also had like... No, actually, there was an office in the same building as that sort of co-work place. When I lived in Gunma, before we moved into this little house near Tokyo, there was that kind of thing next to the gym. So my idea was to go to the gym and then go just to the next, like next door, basically, and sit there and work. But I don't know. There, you know, I think in Tokyo, you will find more of these sort of more social people who like to talk and stuff like that. I feel like in Gunma it's a little bit countryside, and it's like just you sit there and work and don't talk, you sit and work. And the way it was designed and all that really felt like this is not a place to talk to anyone, you sit here and work. And then they also had a Nomehodai machine, so you can drink as much soda as you want. So I was like, ooh, if I start drinking Coke or whatever, and I get hooked on that, and then all that gym is going to be a waste of time. Yeah.
Well, some of the I'm trying to see. So one of the things that I'm looking for in the co-working location that I will sign up for, whichever one it's gonna be, because sometimes they have a focus of networking as one of the perks for going to their place, which means that everyone else is also there to network and talk and be socials and stuff. So I guess that could be something to look out for.
Interesting.
And sometimes also, you know, one of the perks that would be really cool. So sometimes they also have a podcast studio or something like that in the co-working locations. If it's especially here in Stockholm, there's a lot of like creative focused co-working locations where they have like a studio or a podcast room or stuff. So then I could like record from that instead of the office, which then you have like a professional level room to record in, which would also be cool.
Nice. Yeah, it's just something. Yeah, I see AI here. Like some of the stuff you said, it's just like. I mean.
Yeah, it's gonna be like the Matrix pods.
I'm just thinking, like, when I was in Umeå last time, there was a bench, and you sit on it, and on the bench it says, "By sitting here, I am inviting a random person to have a conversation with me." You know that bench? Have you seen? Yeah.
Yeah, I know that exactly. Yeah.
And now we have these co-working places where they have programs where the point is to network with people. It's just like, do we need this much fucking help nowadays?
Permission, like, to socialize.
Yeah, like, have we forgotten how to socialize? This terrifies me with this bullshit internet culture. Like, are we so goddamn behind the cart that we don't know how to fucking talk to each other anymore? And I watched this AI thing today about some guy who want to... I mean, the idea, this company, I forgot the name of it, but the idea is that everyone have their own maid at home, like a robot and all that, and working should be optional. And I'm just sitting here screaming, like, no, we need to, like, we need to get out and meet each other. But I just think that 90% of people, if they have the option not to go to work, they won't go to work, and then you sit home and watch fucking Netflix, and then it's a dark hole you're digging yourself into. You force yourself. You have to suffer every day. Like in this case, like if you don't like socializing, that's because you haven't done it enough. Like you have to sort of push yourself all the time. Ah, goddamn it, AI.
Yeah, I agree, absolutely. It's, you know, we should do, if we meet up in Umeå sometime, we should do like a sketch or something where, you know, one person sits down at that bench and another person joins them and they start talking. And then one person gets up and like the guy sitting is trying to continue the conversation. He goes, oh, yep, I'm up now, so I'm not okay with it anymore. It's like these really strict rules when you can just be a human being or not.
So in real world, in the internet world, that's like muting someone. Like, I'm done, bye, or going AFK.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, I'm not on the bench anymore.
It's terrifying, but at least it sounds good, though. They have those arranged things where the point is to socialize and talk to others.
I'll give you a review if I sign up for any of them. But I can imagine, because they also have some events at the co-working location, like if one of the companies does something successful and they want to do a party, they can do that and stuff. And you have things like that, and like meeting people that is explicitly not from your own company and stuff also feels kind of fun, I think.
Yeah, one thing that I noticed when I went to one of these co-work places where my publisher worked, maybe because I'm always alone, but I just ended up talking shit for, I don't know, 6 hours straight, and I got no work done. So I guess that's not good, but I think that's like, you know, I was stuck in a cage forever and you let me out and I just want to talk. So I guess it will sort of calm down over time.
Yeah, probably. Starves for a conversation.
Yeah, for sure. Interesting.
Yeah, and I know that feeling.
Do we have anything to touch on, like AI-wise?
AI wise, let's see what is in the news with AI recently. So I'm getting more and more like doomer vibes from like the sort of meta conversation about AI. I don't know, I'm still sort of positive about the whole thing that you can do like all of the menial stuff will not be needed anymore because that can be automated, and then you can focus on the more fun stuff and more like meaningful work.
I have one thing that I learned last week of watching all this horrible thing stuff about AI. Like, I remember, like, let's say 2 years ago, I told my wife, like, man, we really need to think about learning computer stuff, and this is the future, yada yada yada. Like, all these mundane jobs are gonna be taken over by AI, etc., etc. But I watched this interview from, I forgot who, they talked about, like, AI is sort of like, it seems like we thought it would take over all the mundane jobs, but it's almost like it's taking over all the IT jobs, like programming, for example. And so I just told my wife the other day, like, shit, I think I'm gonna reverse back to being a plumber. I think this going down this IT route is a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, in one way, I would say, yeah, sure, it's gonna replace a lot of IT stuff and just automate it. But then again, the game was rigged from the start. No, but IT is about like automating stuff anyhow. I mean, they like replaced the like writing by hand and stuff, and replaced like having documents, like real physical documents and stuff. So like the IT industry should shut the fuck up about that. I mean, they like their whole existence is based on replacing jobs. So, you know, it's going to be stuff that gets automated that doesn't need a human being to be done anymore. But as I said, I think like the menial stuff is going to be, you know, replaced, and you can focus on like instead of having someone trying to like say for web design, for example. Well, I can't get this fucking box to fit inside this thing when it's on mobile view. And instead of having one person like sitting there for 8 hours, like bashing their head against the wall, trying to figure that out, an AI could just solve that problem. And then you can focus on like the bigger problem, like what do you want to communicate with this like website or something, and blah, blah, blah. And also one more point, now that I've seen that it's a really good process of learning with ChatGPT, I think that sort of democratizes knowledge in a way that previously to learn how to code, it takes a lot of patience and a lot of determination, and especially if you do it on your own without a high school or a university, that you have to really don't give up. But now you can have like a personal tutor for free that can teach you everything you need to know about like any given subject. So that means that sure, some of the menial stuff is going to be replaced, but then to be at a higher position, to be sort of the crane operator that puts all the pieces together, you can learn that with this new amazing tool that everyone has access to.
I wonder how, like, I was going to, a couple of things there. Because I have applied to a couple of schools in Sweden. Like, I refuse to go to university. I'm too old and I have kids and shit. It's just not going to happen. But there are these programs where you only study for 3 months and then you join a company. And these programs are sort of like for things we're looking for right now. I try to apply, like, the ones that are sort of leaning towards energy stuff, like solar panel, all that sort of global...
Yeah, like engineering positions.
Yeah, for solar panels and stuff like that. Or clean energy. That kind of stuff interests me. And also it's sort of leaning back a little bit to plumbing from what we learned back then in school. But, I mean, I could learn all these things, as you said, by myself with ChatGPT. But it's still, I can't just go to this company and say, ChatGPT taught me all of this, hire me, please. So we're still not quite there in some place. I mean, in some fields.
I guess, yeah, but that, I would say, isn't that changed anyhow. Because even if you go to university, even in the olden days, somebody who could prove their skill would always be more valuable than somebody who couldn't. So even if you learn with ChatGPT, if just be, or just in quotation, but learn or create a portfolio for yourself, then you will have, you can show that you actually know this stuff regardless of where you learned it. And I think that's the important thing, because the person who is going to pay you to do something, they have, like, in reality, no interest in your background. They want to know that you can execute on whatever you need to do. And if you can have a portfolio where you can show something, then that's the most important thing, I would say.
Yeah, I just wonder, though, like, because if I were to try to get a job at the game company, I can show them the games I've released and all that stuff. But if I want to work with inventing new clean energy things, or prove to them that I have, that I can install a solar panel, I don't really know, like, how, I'm not sure how you prove that. Do I send them a picture of a solar panel? I could just take that from the internet. Or
so in that case, I guess my tip would be maybe writing. So you could just blog about that stuff, or you could just, like, take some body of knowledge, like take an article or take a video or something, and then just rewrite it about something. You know, it shows that you're interested in it or something to that effect.
But I could still, like, so this is my problem, is that, because I could, let's say I apply for a job at some energy company and I want to work with nuclear power, and I write this, like, I know everything about it, and I just took all that from ChatGPT. I just asked ChatGPT, write something for me that I can give this employer, and it looks like I am the one who knows all this stuff. And then I find everything online, like pictures and how it works, and I actually don't really know how it works. It's just whatever ChatGPT told me just before I sent this resume. But I guess if I got that job based on that, they would notice quickly that I was full of shit, and then I guess I would get fired. But I, at some point, I don't know, there's, if there is a teacher involved who actually can confirm that you have been there and put in the hours, I don't know.
That's a tough one. But anyhow, I think we've gone over an hour now, so I think we have to wrap it up, unfortunately. Well, it's been a great episode, and in the future, historians will look at this episode and wonder, what was it all about? Wasn't it game development? And I would say, as a response, it was about the House of Game of Life.
Ooh.
And with that, I would like to thank you, Rune, so much for being my great co-host, as always, with an amazing intro, amazing stories, as always. So thank you so much for that.
That's good.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, even though this was sort of a weird episode, I guess, but maybe interesting one. So thank you so much, everyone, and we will see you next week with something else very interesting.
See.
So keep up.
All right. Bye-bye.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.